Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, July the 24th. And we'll talk about last night's presidential candidate debate among the Democratic hopefuls in Charleston, South Carolina. All of the questions used were in the form of short videos posted by internet-savvy voters on the website YouTube, with CNN's Anderson Cooper moderating and prodding the candidates to answer only the questions posed and not something else. Did you see the debate? Did you like the format? Did the debate using the YouTube questions shine any new light on these candidates? Did you learn something you didn't know before? What questions and what answers impressed you the most? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We will talk with a guest this hour about this new format, or the format used at least last night, talk some about the role of the internet in this campaign, and talk about how this YouTube format shaped this debate and whether it made it better or worse as far as you're concerned or he's concerned. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Grant Reher is an associate professor of political science at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University. He's co-author of Click on Democracy, The Internet's Power to Change Political Apathy into Civic Action. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. This sounds like this is right up your alley.
Well, it was very interesting to watch last night. I wouldn't characterize it as a revolutionary change, but I think it was a big change as these things go.
Yeah, one of the first questions was someone who said this is supposed to be a revolutionary debate, and he prodded the candidates to answer the questions and not beat around the bush. Do you think they did that
with a lot of air quotes?
Yeah. Right. Do you think they did that?
Well, In a way, yes, relative to what I've seen in the past, and that's one of the ways I think that this was a big change. I think the biggest effect was on the questions and the questioners, and we can come back to that. But I also think that, for reasons I don't completely understand, it seemed to have an effect on the candidates and their responses.
Like what?
Well, I thought that they were the conversations, at least to the degree that they existed, they were very, very short answers, and that's just a product of the format and the number of candidates. But they seem to be a bit more authentic, a bit more genuine, a bit less canned, even though I will say that I think that Senator Dodd got them off to a bad start by taking the first question and using it as a vehicle to get into his canned stump speech. But nonetheless, I think it did have a refreshing impact on their responses, and
yeah.
So I did perceive a difference.
You say you're not sure why. Is it maybe because it's a you know, a real person asking the question as opposed to Anderson Cooper, for example?
I think that could be it. I think the fact that the questions are framed a bit differently than what they're used to hearing. I think that the fact that there was all of this expectation and hype surrounding it in terms of how they would be answering the questions, and also simply having the video in front of you. And I think that gets back to really the big changes is on the questions and the questioners in terms of having this kind of format, even though it has to be said they were selected, as were the candidates' responses selected in a way. I mean, obviously there was some choosing going on about who got to speak the most and so on.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how, how it made it different, selecting these questioners and the types of questions they posed.
Yeah, I think there was a real value added in that when you allow people to frame their own questions in their own ways with a time limit, but in their own time and in their own homes, it changes, I think, the self-selection process of who's going to participate in the kinds of questions that get asked in comparison, say, with a town hall format where people do ask questions, but it's a different it's a different type of person that comes to that and goes through that selection process. So I think these questions were framed differently. I think they came from different kinds of people, even though, again, there was obviously an editorial selection going on the part of CNN and choosing them.
Yeah, for example, you probably wouldn't hear this gentleman at a stuffy town hall debate. Here's one example of how one of the questioners posed his question.
This here's a two-part question. Pay taxes on my clothes and food. Pay taxes on my place. Pay taxes on my moisturizer. I mean taxes on my weights. Pay taxes on my land. Every year y'all make me pay. I paid a tax on this guitar so I could sing for you today. My taxes put some kids through college I can't afford to send myself. Now tell me, if you were elected president, what would you do to help? Also, I got a parking ticket last week. Could one of y'all pardon me?
We don't have time to go into all what everybody answered to that, but you don't hear that kind of a question at a debate very often.
That's right, and some of them, again, many of the candidates used some of those questions as vehicles to say the things they wanted to say. Anyway, they reframed them, and one of the main ways they did this, and you'll recall this, the most frequent preface, I think, for the candidates was, well, this touches upon a broader question. Mm-hmm. And then they went off and said what they wanted to say. But I do think there were some very interesting questions, and one of them that you didn't play was the question about raising the ceiling on Social Security taxes. I thought it was a very perceptive question, very interestingly framed. Unfortunately, in that one, I think many of the candidates used that as a vehicle to start talking about why we shouldn't privatize the system, which really wasn't the question. But but again, I think this was an interesting change in format.
We're going to check our weather forecast. We'll hear some more of the questions posed by the YouTube participants in last night's presidential candidate debate among the Democratic hopefuls. And we wonder if this debate impressed you or not, whether you liked this format. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And I don't know, maybe if you didn't see the debate, you can still call in with the question that you would have posed had you posted your video on YouTube. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will welcome in Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton. She's going to talk about a proposal she has to make lieutenant governors around the nation push for climate change initiatives. That's after 8. And then after 8:30, we welcome in U.S. Representative Gwen Moore. She'll talk about the federal minimum wage hike that goes into effect today and other issues that she's working on in Congress. So Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton and Congresswoman Gwen Moore coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking with Grant Reher, who is an associate professor of political science at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University, co-author of Click on Democracy, the Internet's Power to Change Political Apathy into Civic Action. And we're talking about last night's Democratic presidential candidate debate, in which the questions came from people who posted them on the website YouTube. A first. And here's an example of one of the questions and one of the answers.
Hi, my name's Mary.
My name is Jen.
And we're from Brooklyn, New York. If you were elected president of the United States, would you allow us to be married to each other?
Congressman Kucinich.
Barry and Jen, the answer to your question is yes. And let me tell you why. Because if our Constitution really means what it says, that all are created equal, if it really means what it says, that there should be equality of opportunity before the law, then our brothers and sisters who happen to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered should have the same rights accorded to them as anyone else, and that includes the ability to have a civil marriage ceremony. Yes, I support you, and welcome to a better and a new America under a President Kucinich administration.
And Professor Rehear, the reason I use that clip, seems to me that the other candidates who answered that were against gay marriage but for civil unions.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they were certainly emphasizing the latter of the two things that you said, and going into some detail about the importance of legal rights that would be analogous to to married couples.
But I thought it was different because it was. I mean, we've heard this question posed before, but this time we had it was right from a lesbian couple asking, can we get married to each other? Why wouldn't you want us to get married to each other? Instead of just maybe Anderson Cooper asking that question.
Right, and another question of the same type, I think, that prompted, at least in. For the one respondent I have in particular, what I think was a more honest and self-reflective answer was a question about the degree to which religion should be involved in public policy and in a president's pushing of different kinds of policy to John Edwards. And he took that opportunity, I think, to really say something relatively reflective and pretty honest about his own ways of thinking about this and struggling with this issue. And so, again, that goes back to something I said earlier in terms of how these questions, I think, did have an effect on the candidate's responses. Not revolutionary, but I did perceive a change.
Yeah. Well, anything else that struck you about last night's debate, a question or an answer that, that was particularly noteworthy?
Well, nothing leaps out in terms of decisive moments that we always look for in these kinds of debates. I mean, there were moments where I think candidates took the initiative to make some statements that are, again, relatively bold as far as these things go, one being humorous, where Senator Biden talked about the fellow with the automatic weapon and saying if that's his baby, he's got some big problems. And he said, no, I'm being serious here about, the problem with the way that we think about violence and guns. And again, I go back to the question that really stayed with me in terms of a perceptive question, well framed, was the one about raising the ceiling on Social Security taxes.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Steve in Shorewood is first. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
I think that's Keith. How's it going, Joy?
I'm sorry, Keith. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Having been to the Kennedy Library over the 4th of July week, got a chance again to see his inaugural speech and some other speeches and the way he campaigned, and his ability he kind of framed his campaign about this idea of we have to start looking at doing bigger things, the Peace Corps, Man on the Moon, things like that. I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed in my generation, the baby boomers, because we've been so embroiled over things that are about ourselves, tax cuts, and protecting Social Security, and all these small-minded things, I think. And when you look at all the candidates who are running, for the most part, with the exception of maybe Fred Thompson, we're all looking at baby boomers who are running for president. What I would like to ask, if I had gotten around to making a YouTube video, is what is your big picture vision for America? And I'd like specifics rather. I would have liked specifics rather than platitudes and generalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't think that you have that big picture vision for America from the candidates, Steve or Keith? I'm sorry, it's written Steve on my screen.
Yeah, I know. I thought I corrected you on that too. But anyhow, I guess you hear these bromides and platitudes through the campaigns, but not anything that's specific and largely. And I think your guests might agree with this. Is the problem we're seeing is too few politicians like to stick their necks out, other than our great Senator Russ Feingold. Everybody else seems to kind of act like turtles with the idea, not like turtles, which is, the only way you move ahead is to stick your neck out. And people are just so reticent to just come out, be leaders, and advance the big picture ideas that we need. And by the way, one other thing, I thought that the format was great. I don't know if I picked this up or not, but I hope CNN does this with the Republican candidates.
Yeah, they will, right, Professor Rehear?
I think it's, September 17th, I believe, is the date that the Republican candidates are going to use a similar format.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Keith, for the call. Jim in Menominee Falls. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. I'm calling just to ask. It's interesting that the Democratic Party here is willing to try a YouTube format for asking questions and that. But then why are they still opposed? I understand that a few months ago there was some Fox Network station that wanted to do it, and they made it clear that they wouldn't do it for the Fox Network, but they'll do it for you too. Why, you know, why is the Democrats selecting a format, one that somehow they think is going to be beneficial to them, but not the other one? Opposing views isn't a good thing, or that's even assuming there was going to be opposing views.
Yeah, I mean, we did a program on that some time ago. I don't remember the details, but there was difficulty in Fox being able to be the media sponsor of a debate. Are you familiar with that, Professor?
No. I'm not. The one thing that popped in my mind as the caller was posing the question was also concerns about, and this goes back to last night, certainly one of the key features of this that is relatively invisible and something that we would want to hear a lot more from CNN about, Anderson Cooper did talk about this at the beginning of the program, but is the selection mechanism on the questions. And so I imagine that that may have been also another concern, was how the questions would be selected and what would go into choosing them and thinking about the networks and so on.
Yeah. In any case, Jim, what did you think about the YouTube debate?
I think it's wonderful hearing, you know, all these different views and actually getting the public more involved in it, I think, is fantastic. So from that standpoint, I think it was it's fun. It gives it the public feeling more interaction with people who tend to feel like they're all in ivory towers, and I, as a common person, have no way other than television to find out about them.
Yeah, I also thought it was. It was just a lot more entertaining than they usually are, wasn't it, Professor Reher?
Yeah, and I think so. But I think also the caller just made a really good point. I'd like to extend from him if I could, and that's that. I think that also, given that format, there's a sense of participation and investment that comes out of it, even for folks who weren't selected. I mean, they got 3,000 of these videos approximately sent to them, and I imagine that, first of all, the folks that took the time to do these had to go back and do some thinking, do a little research that they may not have done otherwise, and then after that may follow this issue and follow these candidates and the campaigns more than they would have otherwise. And I think that the more we can do these kinds of events where people actually, citizens actually get a sense of investment and are able to create for themselves a sense of investment in the process, it's going to pay dividends down the road. And I think that's a good comment.
Yeah. Now, the only 30 seconds before a news break, there were some questions from some much younger than baby boomer YouTubers, right?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the other way in which this might have had a great effect, which is the people who saw it. I haven't seen the numbers on that, but I'm very keen to see whether this had a younger audience than other debates.
Yeah, we're talking with Grant Reher, an associate professor of political science, and the co-author of Click on Democracy, The Internet's Power to Change Political Apathy into Civic Action. And we're talking about the YouTube debate last night among the Democratic presidential hopefuls. We'll continue after this check of the latest news. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, July the 24th. It's 7:36. We are talking about last night's presidential candidate debate among the Democratic contenders. It was a first. The questions came from people who posted videos with the questions to the website YouTube. We're talking about the involvement of YouTube and the internet in this debate and how it shaped the debate and whether indeed it was revolutionary or not, and welcoming your reactions to it. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Did you see it? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Did the debate and the way the questions were posed shine any new light on the candidates? We welcome your reactions and your questions for our guest, who is Grant Reher, Associate Professor of Political Science at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University, co-author of Click on Democracy, The Internet's Power to Change Political Apathy into Civic Action. And we'll go back to the phones. Chris in Milwaukee's been waiting. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
I just had a quick comment to make. I thought it was a very good format to have. I thought it was a good way, a positive way to use YouTube as opposed to what we've seen in the past with George Allen's campaign.
Yeah, it's used to embarrass people sometimes, Professor Reher?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting contrast that Chris drew, because there is a concern, I think, for a lot of us that watch these things about the negative effects that this can have, and that a problem, I think, for campaigns, particularly at the presidential level, but for candidates and campaigns all over, is the absence of authentic discussion. And one of the reasons for that is that the candidates are legitimately scared to engage in those kinds of things and to think out loud and to let their guard down, because the media is always there to catch them when they stumble and make an issue of it. This only heightens that, in that if you've got essentially an army of people doing opposition research in the form of constantly putting people on tape, then the concern that I and others have is that it has a chilling effect on the conversation. And so I think that's a great and insightful comment, that this was a different way to use it to actually generate more authentic conversation rather than less.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Chris, for the call. Let me play another example of one of the questions posed by a YouTube video poster. This one was unique in that you didn't see a human being. You saw a snowman asking this question.
Hello, Democratic candidates. I've been growing concerned that global warming, the single most important issue to the snowmen of this country, is being neglected. As president, what will you do to ensure that my son will live a full and happy life? Thank you.
Well, that was one of the unique questions, Professor. I mean,
I got to tell you, that was not one of my favorite ones, and here's the reason why. And that's that it brings up an important issue, global warming, but I didn't really see anything added to that other than throwing a snowman in there. So it was funny. It was clever. But I didn't really see the difference between that and saying, "What would you do about global warming?" So which is fine. But that's I didn't see a great value added on that one.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Iraq. A number of questions were on the war, and here's I'm gonna play two of them and get your reaction to both of them. Here's the first.
Mitch from Philadelphia. My question for all the candidates: how do we pull out now? And the follow-up: are we watching the same blanket war? I certainly wasn't a big fan of the invasion / liberation, and sickens me to hear about soldiers wounded and getting killed daily, not to mention innocent Iraqis. But how do we pull out now? Government shaky, bombs daily. Don't you think we pulled out now that it'll open up for Iran and Syria, God knows Russia? How do we pull out now? And isn't it our responsibility to get these people up on their feet? I mean, do you leave a newborn baby to take care of himself? How do we pull out now?
What do you think of that?
I thought that was a very effective question, because it really got at the crux, I think, of what a lot of folks in this country who are convinced that this war has not gone well and it was not well thought out, or the policies weren't really considered in the ways that they should have been. I think it gets at the crux of the problem that those citizens face now. As he said, how do we pull out now? And so I thought it was a very, very effective question.
Yeah. Did you think it got an effective answer from the candidates?
Well, you did. Hmm. You did see, hmm. Yes. I mean, you did see some differences between them. And again, I think some authentic conversations between them, as limited as those were, given the time frame and the way that the moderator kept moving them through, which, I guess was inevitable. But, I think particularly Joe Biden set out some pretty clear opinions about why he thought this wouldn't work and couldn't work. And then a couple of the other candidates, Richardson in particular, posed a different point of view on that. So I thought that was relatively effective as a vehicle for getting some good sense of the differences between them on that.
Yeah, Biden was really passionate about saying things like, let's start telling the truth. We're not, you know, we're not going to be having our troops out of here by next spring. It's going to take whatever, you know, a year to even scratch the surface or something.
Right.
Here's another one posed by the mom of a soldier, I believe.
As the mother of an American soldier deploying to Iraq for a second time, I would like to know if the perception is true that the Democrats are putting politics before conscience. How many more soldiers must die while these political games continue in our government? Is the reason that we are still in Iraq and seemingly will be for some time due to the Democrats' fear that blame for the loss of the war will be placed on them by the Republican spin machine?
That's a sharp-edged question. I thought it was an interesting question. I didn't think the candidates really addressed it. They used that as a vehicle, again, to talk more generally about the policies there. She's asking a pretty specific question about the politics within the Democratic Party, and none of the candidates really wanted to comment on that too much for obvious reasons. There's eight of them there. They don't want to beat up too much on each other in their party.
Yeah. I think Kucinich might have said, yes, it's politics.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He did. That's right. He did.
He
did.
He was the only
one. Direct answer. Yeah. Right.
Judy in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am very curious about whether there was a difference between people who watched it on CNN.com. I really was amazed that CNN generously provided it at the same time on my computer, because I don't have cable. And for me, it was a much more personal experience sitting closer to my computer screen and watching each candidate as they answered. I would be sitting very far away from my television. And I found Obama as sensible and reasoned, Hillary Clinton quick and smart, but also a bit strident. And John Edwards seemed to be a lot more passionate than I ever remember seeing him.
Interesting, because you were sitting so close to your computer, and that's what about that, Professor Rieger?
That's a really interesting comment, and I hadn't really thought of that. That's another dimension then to how it could have made a difference and could be something interesting. Because when the caller was speaking, I immediately thought of the 1960 debates in terms of Nixon Kennedy, and whether you listened to them on the radio or saw them on TV, and that's a pretty dramatic thing. But that's what first popped up in my mind. It's interesting. It'd be interesting to see if there's some data that comes out of surveys of people who watched it in one format or another.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Judy, for calling in. We wonder what you think. Did you watch the YouTube debate last night? It was YouTube and CNN hosting the debate among the Democratic presidential candidates. And we're playing some of the questions that the YouTube citizens posted on the website that were selected for the debate, and talking about how this format shaped the debate. And welcoming your impressions, too, and your questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, we will welcome in Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton. We'll talk about her proposal to make lieutenant governor's offices around the nation the place to go for climate change initiatives. And after 8:30, we will hear from U.S. Representative Gwen Moore from Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, talk some about the federal minimum wage going up today and other issues that she's working on before Congress. Opportunity as well for you to call in with your questions for both Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton and U.S. Representative Gwen Moore. Right now, we're analyzing last night's Democratic presidential candidate debate that featured the questions from citizens who posted videos to the website YouTube. There will be a similar debate on September 17th among the Republican candidates, and we'll certainly try to examine that debate as well. Here's another example of a question posted by a citizen, and the answer is, I believe, of two of the candidates.
My name is Jordan Williams, and I am a student at KU from Coffeyville, Kansas. This question is meant for Senator Obama and Senator Clinton. Whenever I read an editorial about one of you, the author never fails to mention the issue of race or gender, respectively. Either one is not authentically black enough, or the other is not satisfactorily feminine. How will you address these critics and their charges if one or both of you should end up on the Democratic ticket in 08?
Senator Obama, how do you address those who say you're not authentically black enough? Not my question. Jordan's question.
You know, when I'm catching a cab in Manhattan in the past, I think I've given my credentials. But let me go to the broader issue here, and that is that race permeates our society. It is still a critical problem. But I do believe in the core decency of the American people, and I think they want to get beyond some of our racial divisions. Unfortunately, we've had a White House that hasn't invested in the kinds of steps that have to be done to overcome the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow in this country. And as President of the United States, my commitment on issues like education, my commitment on issues like health care, is to close the disparities and the gaps, because that's what's really going to solve the race problem in this country. If people feel like they've got a fair shake, if children feel as if the fact that they have a different surname or they've got a different skin color is not going to impede their dreams, then I am absolutely confident that we're going to be able to move forward on the challenges that we face as a country.
Senator Clinton, you have a minute as well, since this question is to you.
Well, I couldn't run as anything other than a woman. I am proud to be running as a woman, and I'm excited that I may, you know, may be able finally to break that hardest of all glass ceilings. But obviously, I'm not running because I'm a woman. I'm running because I think I'm the most qualified and experienced person to hit the ground running in January 2009. And I trust the American people to make a decision that is not about me or my gender or about Barack or his race or about Bill and his ethnicity, but about what is best for you and your family.
Well, it was a little bit of a long clip, but I wanted to, I guess I played it for a couple of different reasons. Your general reaction to that question and the responses, Professor Reher.
Well, I'm glad you played it, too, because I thought that was an interesting one, and it kind of connects back to something that the very first caller to your show, Keith, who I guess is also known as Steve, brought up, which is the absence, at least in his perception, of a big picture vision that was articulated with any kind of specificity to it. And I think that question, the response by Obama, gets at the degree to which it's there, if one is listening for it. I mean, that's the beginning of the kind of thing that I think that the caller is searching for. You know, that's something he needs to expand upon and define more specifically. But I think, again, the format and the kinds of questions that they got, and that was an unusual form of a question that gets asked a lot of the candidates, stimulated them to, at least in one case, I think, articulate a bigger vision. The other thing I wanted to add to that, actually, and it goes back to the questions about Iraq, changing the subject just a little bit, but again, attaching it to Keith's observation. I think one of the other reasons why there isn't more of this big picture articulation at this point is simply the fact of the war. I mean, the candidates are all focused in on this, and it's just another instance and way in which the Iraq war has really colonized the political conversations and political debate right now. And what comes out of that is, I think, a reluctance to think in more bigger terms about what new things we might do, because here the focus is on what to do about the thing we're already involved in. And so I think that has an effect in a lot of different ways on the political dialogue.
Yeah. The other reason I played the clip was it was an example, too, of Anderson Cooper, the, you know, the newsman moderator, saying that wasn't my question, it was Jordan's question, you know, because he thought that maybe Barack Obama raised his eyebrow at him.
Yeah, he didn't want to be held accountable for asking him if he was black enough, right? Exactly.
Yeah. And what do you think of the moderator's role in this debate last night? Do you think he did a pretty good job in terms of trying to keep the candidates on the question?
Well, given the format, I think so. I think sometimes the cutting them off, which after a while they disregard it, but they kind of disregard it in the way that sometimes my students disregard the starting time of a class period, where you know they observed it, but they took an extra 20 seconds each time. I think it was relatively well done. I would have liked to have seen fewer questions, frankly, with more time to answer them and more opportunities for the candidates to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Where I thought it was getting interesting at some points was where they would try to have conversations between themselves, and Anderson Cooper jumped in and cut that off, which is, I guess, you know, what he was supposed to do. So, mm-hmm.
What about John Edwards' comment that he was caught, I guess, talking to Hillary Clinton with a live mic at a recent appearance, saying something along the lines of maybe we can make these debates smaller groups of candidates.
Right, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's something that... certainly, you know, there's no reason why two or three of them couldn't just say we'll have our own debate, or one could challenge another specific person to a debate, and that I think would have some usefulness to us at this point. And again, and allowing there to be in a debate or a conversation format more depth, and you know, it's something also that could come to go back to sort of. Close this circle to go. It could come from citizens themselves. I mean, maybe people that are listening to your show right now, they could start an internet movement to bring two or three of the candidates to Wisconsin for a more limited debate because they want greater depth. This could be something that could be started and pushed for through the internet that maybe the candidates then would have to respond to. But there is this criticism when they start thinking in those terms that, well, they're being exclusive. We have to bring everybody in, and you do want those events as well, but. It's a trade-off. It's always going to be a trade-off when you've got eight people there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to one last question, and then I'm going to play a long clip to close the hour.
Okay.
But do you think this format is here to stay? Or are we going to see more of these YouTube, you know, type debates?
Well, if my initial reaction and the reaction at least of your callers is any indication, I think mm-hmm. the answer is yes, because we all seem to be in agreement that there were some interesting things accomplished, and it was, on the whole, a positive change. Would this be the only way we would do debates from now on? No, I don't think so. But I think that this kind of involvement of citizens in more creative ways, it's more authentic for them and provides them with more investment in the process, is a good thing.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
That's Grant Reher, Associate Professor of Political Science at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University. I'll leave you with the closing question last night.
My name is Jason Koop, and I am from Colorado Springs, Colorado. And my question is for all of the candidates, and it is intended to lighten up the mood a little bit. I'd like for each of you to look at the candidate to your left and tell the audience one thing you like and one thing you dislike about that particular candidate. And remember, be honest.
Senator Gravel?
I turned to my left, and I like Christoph. I knew his dad. I served with his dad. I do have a difference of opinion with respect to where the money's coming from. I've advocated people follow the money if you want to find out what's going to happen after any one of these individuals are elected. Follow the money, because it's politics as usual, Senator, is what you're seeing.
Senator Dodd?
Well, I like John Edwards. I love his wife, Elizabeth, and his family. And I think we've had enough of negative in politics. I have nothing negative to say about the gentleman.
You're not going to answer the question. All right. Senator Edwards?
I admire what Senator Clinton has done for America, what her husband did for America. I'm sure about that coat.
Senator Clinton?
Yeah, John, it's a good thing we're ending soon. You know, I think that Chris Dodd has it absolutely right. I mean, I admire and... like very much Barack, as I do with all of the candidates here. And I think that what you've seen tonight is how ready the Democrats are to lead. We are ready to lead the change that America so desperately needs.
All right. I'll take that as you're not going to answer. Senator Obama?
I actually like Hillary's jacket. I don't know what's wrong with it. I like the fact that Bill Richardson has devoted his life to public service. because that, I think, is the highest of callings. I don't like the fact that he either likes the Yankees or the Red Sox, but doesn't apparently like the White Sox. And we're having a tough time this year.
Yeah, and Bill Richardson went on to say that he didn't have anything negative to say about any of the candidates standing on the stage, that any one of them would make a fine vice president in his administration. So that's from last night's Democratic presidential candidate debate, the one featuring the questions posed by citizens via the website YouTube. More on the debate coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. Kathleen Dunn and her guest will recap last night's YouTube presidential debate in her 9 o'clock hour. Thanks very much to Leo Durand for producing the hour, and to Cheryl Gasser as well for pulling all of those clips, and to Christina Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.